Alan Kring Productions presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 5 for Autumn Semester 2018. Lecture 9, delivered on September 18, 2018. The title of this lecture is The Federal Reserve.
Today, the Federal Reserve. This is the first of two special lectures that are not in the textbook. This one, you can go into the resources tab in ReggieNet and you will see that there is a link to a video made by the Federal Reserve that covers pretty much what I'm showing you here in this lecture. It's a cheesy animated video, but it covers the matter fairly well. And it's probably more interesting than I'll be in this lecture. And then on Thursday, I do a lecture on ethics. These are topics, the Federal Reserve and ethics, seem to be areas where finance textbooks don't want to bother. In the second case, ethics is way too dangerous to talk about, even though I am required to teach you about ethics. The state of Illinois insists that I teach you about ethics, which is kind of hilarious when you think about the state of Illinois requiring that we teach about ethics. Well, we're all in Cook County because we support Cook County. Our taxes do. But this lecture, there's a thing in finance that business in general tends to be conservative. Don't get me wrong, it is not right wing. There's a difference between right wing, neo-fascist, and all that, and conservative. Businesses tend to be conservative, and so there is this sense in finance that we don't want to push too hard into territory where we talk about the government and the importance or the influence of the government. It's usually the idea the only good government is no government, or government, the only thing it ever does is interfere in the free markets. And so there is an unwillingness to recognize the powerful role that the Federal Reserve has in our economy. That it's just, well, we take care of ourselves, never mind the fact that mommy makes our meals for us, kind of thing. We have to recognize that this central bank does exist. It has reasons for why it was created, and it has reasons for why it should continue, but that does not mean that it is above criticism. The Federal Reserve has had its great moments, and it has had disgraceful moments. But start out with an understanding. Countries were forming central banks, or almost like they were showing up on their own, in country after country in the developed world, even in the 16 and 1700s. Central banks were showing up. France, Germany, Austro-Hungary, Italy. The world was recognizing, and countries were recognizing, that there needs to be a powerful central bank that manages the banks and sets the standard for the banks of that country. We were going to have none of that. There were a few attempts to create a national bank early in the life of the country. Oh, there were forces that just peed themselves. Andrew Jackson made it a big part of his campaign. We're going to get rid of this national bank nonsense. It wasn't even a central bank. It was just a national bank. He rabble-roused about how that was just going to control people and take their money. And so we really didn't even touch the idea of a central bank for a long, long time. But know this. The banks, the idea was, we're independent. We're free marketers. The best government is no government. Leave the markets alone. They take care of themselves. And it's the best economy is the economy that sorts out its own problems without mommy government. Well, that's fine, except that it was creating already in the first half of the 19th century, in the first half of the 1800s, it was already one of the motive forces for the divisiveness that was happening in the country. The bankers were in the north. The merchants, the shipping merchants, were in the north. The power of capital was in the north, and they starved the south. And there was bitterness, anger, hatred of the northern bankers and all of their ways. And when the northerners started telling the southerners what to do, even though the southerners were a bunch of cretins and creeps with slavery, the southerners saw it as just more of this bullshit that had been on them ever since the country began. From Washington's time, the northerners were constantly getting in the way of southerners, and their banks and their big business were pushing their way and bullying everyone and keeping the South down. That hatred was there, and it is still there to this day. Some of my relatives in Tennessee and Kentucky, you mention a man like George Washington, and they'll spit on the ground right at your feet because of the crap that he pulled. Most people don't understand the history of this country. You're not allowed to know. George Washington was known as the eater of villages because of his genocide against the Iroquois. And then his loving relationship with the big whiskey makers. And he had his federal troops smashing the stills in Pennsylvania and Tennessee and Kentucky. Yeah, there was a lot of hatred. And the big bankers, well, they had it all. And there was no one regulating them. By the time the Civil War was over and that little rebellion was gone, well, there was a party going on. Those bankers were just having a heyday. The scams, the lies, the cheaters, the cat stranglers, the whole nine yards. And we had the best government that money could buy. Literally, the presidents, the senators, the representatives, the house of the state legislatures, the judges were all the best that the bosses in the back rooms, literally in smoke-filled back rooms in the Old Boys Network, could create. And everything was just fine, except that these banks that were popping up were just a freaking disaster. Sod banks. Have you ever heard of a sod bank? A sod bank was just a bank that's set up by a bunch of scammers out in some place where there was some gold or something like that. People would deposit their money there, and then the sod bank's owners would just fold the bank up and take off. They would write paper, phony paper money that people thought was real. And the sod banks just fell one after the other. No one could stop them. No one could prosecute them. There weren't even any laws against it. And then there were the big city banks where you could set up a scam and you could take people's money and then just disappear into the night. Nothing could be done about you. You wanted to be a good banker? Well, if I'm a bad banker, I would make sure that I wrecked you and then took your bank at pennies on the dollar. This is the reality of our ways, how it worked before we had regulations. Let me show you something. Banks have been around for hundreds and hundreds, well, even longer than that. People don't even realize that banks, checks, securitization of transactions was around in the Middle Ages. Now, in the Middle Ages, there were laws against charging interest at first. But that began to let up after a while. So let's think about it this way. You, sir, turns out that you are the nephew of Bill Gates. You didn't know it, but he sends you a check one day for $1,000. No, I mean, Bill wants to make sure, he wants to make sure that you're responsible. So you come to me, a banker, and what you do is you put your money, the deposit of $1,000, in my bank. $1,000. Well, now you see, I need to make a living, so I need to do something with that liability. That's my liability now. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to lend that money out at an interest rate. That's how I'll make a profit. But I want to keep some in case you come back to the bank and ask for a loan of your money. Or if you write a check, you come in and I can honor it on your account. So what I'll do is I'll have a reserve. And let's say that I keep 10% of your money in reserve. That would be $100. And then the rest is lendable. The 90%. Well, okay, that works. Now, you, sir, you come into my bank and you say, I should like a loan. And I said, you want a loan for how much? $900. Well, I do have that. What do you want to do with that $900? And you say, well, I should like to make a male escort service.
Sounds good.
Cougars are us. Cool. I lend you $900. Well, what's going to happen with that $900 is you're going to have, let's say, you will be the one who sets up the website in the dark web, the very dark web. Good. Well, he pays you the $900 to do this. You come to my bank with that $900. Okay, well, what I'll do is, you're going to deposit it, and so I will keep $90 on reserve, and I have $810 to lend out. Well, that then, you, madam, come to my bank and say, I should like to borrow
$810. Mm-hmm. I'd like to borrow $810.
Indeed. What is it that you want to borrow that for? Your own dog kennel. It's called Here Doggy. Two exclamation points. This lecture is getting out of hand real fast here. And so and what you do is you go to this fellow to make the necessary arrangements for the doggy, and you set up the website, doggy.sty. And you put that $110 in the bank she paid you, and there's $81 I keep in reserve, and the other $729 is available to lend. Someone borrows that. Do you see what is happening here? You have a cascading forward arithmetic sequence. By the time this is over, that $1,000 that you put in has become, in the American economy, $10,000. You say, how did you do that? Well, I just take one over. That's called the money multiplier. So all you do to take the money multiplier is you take the original $1,000 times 1 over 0.1, and that's how you get it. Now, in the real world, there would be some money kept in people's pockets, and that would slow down the multiplier a little bit. But do you see how rapidly the money supply expands in a banking system? But the problem was that this was all messed up. There was no control over whether banks could even keep reserves. And oftentimes what they kept was inadequate, so that you might come to a bank to get some of your money out. We don't have it. We've let it all out. Sorry. Well, then you tell everyone else your money isn't there anymore. They run the bank and they collapse it. The dirty trick was, what I could do was, if I was a powerful banker with connections to the newspapers, you could be running a very reputable bank, and you could satisfy normal demand deposits and all that. But what I would play is a game like this. Did you hear that he doesn't have enough money to cover your deposits you made? Did you hear he doesn't have? Did you hear? And suddenly you all come in. And suddenly, of course, you don't have the money to satisfy everyone all at once, and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Wasn't there a movie about
Yes, as a matter of fact, it's easy to do. I mean, it was the way we did it. The big, powerful families that are rich and famous and all philanthropic now, that was how they did their trick. They destroyed good banks. With this game that they play, they make everyone run a bank. And of course, even if you're a responsible banker with a 10, 20% reserve, if everyone comes in at once because they're freaking out because of a rumor they heard, well, you can't cover them all, and your bank just like that. And then I go in and I buy it for pennies on the dollar. And of course, then I also tell the police to go arrest you for what you did, so you'll stop bitching. Yes. No, okay, there were two different ways it was working. Demand deposits are deposits that you have to honor immediately. And then there are ones that are called negotiable order of withdrawal deposits that have 30 days. For example, you write a check. If it's a check that is written on, drawn from a bank account that's a bank, a real bank, immediately it has to be honored. If it's from a credit union, that is not a real bank check. That's a negotiable order of withdrawal. Technically, they don't have to honor it for 30 days. Now, they're not going to do that unless they have to, but they don't have to honor it. So it depends upon the kind of account that you're talking about. The typical draft demand has to be honored immediately, and that's why there were two tiers, and there always have been. So that for normal people, they could be held off for 30 days. But for the big dogs, they have to be honored immediately. Now, what happened was that these kinds of scams, and there were other scams too, and some of them have gone on even into our current time. Madam, if you lend me $10,000, I shall pay you $20,000 back in 1 year. Why would you do that? That's incredible. Because you're special. You're one of the insiders. You understand how this all works, and so I'm going to take care of you. See how I'm playing her? Mm-hmm. This is Bernie Madoff. Okay, now I take your money and I just enjoy it. Mm-hmm. Party! And then what I'll do is the next round, okay, I'm about to have to pay you. You lend me $50,000. I'll see to it that you get $200,000 back in a year. Oh, wow. Yeah, I know, because you're special. And so you give me that money, and then I pay you off, and I enjoy the rest. And then when it comes time, I go to you. You lend me $1 million. I'll see to it that you get $10 million back in a year. Sure. You see what I'm doing here is I'm creating, and then I pay you off. It's a Ponzi scheme. Now, you say, well, this is outrageous. You should go to prison, Bernie Madoff. Okay, maybe so. But who the hell is stupid enough to believe that they are special enough to get deals like that? That was the thing, and I got in so much trouble because I kept saying, these are a bunch of dumbasses who got what they deserved. They thought they were special, and he screwed them because they were too stupid to understand there's nothing special about them. They just thought that they deserved more than normal people do. And unfortunately, no one wanted to hear that side of it. It was just wrong what he did. Well, yeah, it was, but he did what he did. Okay, now, moving on here. This created crises, one after the other, in communities as banks collapsed and people lost their life savings. In the 1870s, 1880s, 1890s, it got so severe that the economy, the macroeconomy, was starting to suffer some pretty serious recessions. I mean, they were long. We talk about recessions that last 4 quarters, 6 quarters. We're talking about recessions that were lasting like 2, 5 years, 8 years, because of these hits, one after the other, to the financial markets. Now, it comes a time, interestingly enough, one of the best times for reform is not when so many good people are being screwed. It's when so many rich people are being screwed. Suddenly, the legislatures find Jesus. And they start saying, oh, we got to reform this. Well, by the time we're in the 1900s, the banking system was a mess. No one trusted it. It was screwing over. It doesn't matter if you screw over all the millions and millions of normal people. When you start screwing over the rich people, well then, by heaven, by golly, by God, we're going to do something about it. And finally, in 1913, the Federal Reserve Act was passed, which created a central bank for the United States. Perhaps 200-300 years after it had been done in every other developed country in the world, we finally decided, well, maybe we should have a little bit of government intervention. You think? Now, first of all, it was sort of new in the time. Yeah, it's wonderful to create laws to stop wrongdoing, especially when you're talking about businesses. But how do you prosecute? Okay, U.S. attorneys, you go after these bad guys. We're busy. We're busy with serial killers, bank robbers, thieves, burglars, you name it, hooligans. You want us to deal with complex financial laws? Well, you see, this was what had happened because antitrust laws, in other words, laws against monopolies, had just started too. But you're still talking about laws that are complex in their enforcement, in their provisions, and you've got these attorneys, federal attorneys. What are we supposed to do with these laws? So the model that was developed with the antitrust laws at the end of the 1800s, and it was applied to the Federal Reserve Act, was you, in the laws themselves, you create an agency that oversees enforcement of the law. First thing you do is you make the law, and then you create an agency that can interpret the laws to make regulations. And then they apply those regulations through experts that they hire to the targets of the regulation. So in other words, with antitrust laws, we make the Federal Trade Commission. Through the Environmental Protection Act, we make the EPA. Through securities laws, we make the Securities Exchange Commission. To simply be the body that interprets the complexity of law and says, all right, businesses that are regulated by this, these are the rules. And we will come in and we will crack your ass if you don't follow. This takes the pressure off the justice system by putting it in the hands of those who know that kind of business. And businesses are then in a better position because these regulators can just sit down with them. Here are the laws. You're making mistakes. Here's where your mistakes get you in trouble. Here's where we just help you get out of the mistakes. So with the Federal Reserve Act, they created the Federal Reserve Board. The Federal Reserve Board was created to oversee banking laws. The Federal Reserve Board. At the top of the food chain, first of all, what it did was it divided the country into 12 districts, each of which would have a district bank. Now, the bad thing was that back then, like in the early 1900s and 1913, there weren't a whole lot of people out west, so the western districts are huge. And now, like San Francisco's district, it's insane. They have so much to do because so much banking activity happens out there now, whereas you've got one of the ones on the East Coast, like the Bank of Connecticut, that's small. Maryland, Connecticut, very small. Now, at the top of the Federal Reserve Board is the Board of Governors. The Board of Governors There are seven of these. They are appointed by the president with the advice and consent of the Senate. One of them is the chairman. Now, don't let me trick you on a quiz or an exam, say, there are seven governors and one chairman. No, there are seven governors. One of them is the chairman. There are only seven. Now, historically, the Board of Governors has been just top-notch people. In recent years, and this goes back to, interestingly enough, George W. Bush and Barack Obama, both decent presidents in their own way, but their standards for whom they put on the Board of Governors, there were some pretty not best of officials. So, but there's still one thing that has happened in the last few years, maybe the last 10 years. The Board of Governors used to be a bunch of old white guys, and now there's more diversity in terms of gender, in terms of ethnicity. So it is more inclusive now. But some of them are not necessarily even the ones who are more inclusive. They just don't appoint the ones like they used to. But that's neither here nor there. Now, below the board are the 12 district banks, each of which has a bank president. Now, these bank presidents are the cream of the crop. They have degrees in finance, accounting. They have years of experience in banking. They are above reproach. These aren't the kind of people you can dig through their past and find bad things about. These are, I've met some of these people. They are just consummate professionals. The best dressed, best clothing, the best manners. I mean, I don't think they even have sex. They're just that perfect. Now, we're right on the border between two districts here. To the north is Chicago. And then to the south is St. Louis. We're actually just about 40 miles into the Chicago district. Go a little south. Now, it's interesting because the district banks have different sort of like their thing. Like, for example, the bank in St. Louis is very much a bank dedicated to education and outreach and to data analysis. There are other ones that are more dedicated to security of systems, all that kind of stuff. Some are this and that. Now, interestingly enough, the St. Louis Fed, they, by the way, it's the St. Louis Fed that made that animated video that you'll see on in ReggieNet in, at the link. They do lots of things for kids, for schools. They've got games on their website. I mean, when I need some information, I call them. It was maybe about 3 or 4 years ago, I took my students in my finance club down to the St. Louis Fed. They just laid out the red carpet. They had all, I thought they were going to have the president of the district bank come in and speak. They didn't, but they had the top economists, some of the heavies of the St. Louis Fed, spoke to the kids, and it was just wonderful. They were really helpful. They got a little touchy when I tried to take a picture inside of everyone. No, you're not taking a picture there. I mean, it was a wonderful, it was a really great experience. And they were just throwing jobs and internships. They were offering the moon. Oh, you work for us, and we pay for your education clear to a PhD. You can use our data to write your dissertation. Oh, yeah, and we have all these other things that you can join in projects. I mean, they were just throwing jobs. And, of course, you got, I don't want to go to St. Louis. Mommy and Daddy live in Chicago, and I want to go back to Chicago because the hot dogs there give me diarrhea. And so it was embarrassing because they wanted to make ISU part of their hiring cycle instead of just hiring from Mizzou and places like that. And it didn't work out. Okay, now contrast that with when we were up in Chicago. Now, all of these have sort of like a museum or like a tourist place in these feds. Now, you go in there and you see $1 million in a suitcase. You go in there and you see shredded money. You go in there and you see gold or whatever. So we were in Chicago. We were going down, I think it was Monroe, from one place that we had scheduled something to the other. We had about an hour, so I hey, let's go in and look at the museum at the Chicago Fed. The Chicago Fed is not friendly, not at all. It's Chicago. It was worse than that. They packed us all into this one staging room and this big security guard, I mean big, told my students they could go in one at a time. At the back of the line, I was about to walk in, and that woman hit me across the knuckles with her nightstick. I mean, she hit me hard. Crack, you ain't going in. I said, damn, woman, that hurt. It turned out she was great. We had drinks later that night. But, but anyway, I mean, they were really not nice to us. They didn't want anyone to come out to talk. Oh, wow, a group of college finance and economics majors? Wow. Now, what are you doing here? Why are there so many of you? Are you going to try to steal our money? It was like a very uncomfortable experience. So you'll find that that's very different places when you go. The St. Louis Fed, if you are interested, this time I would not do it again with my club unless I had some assurance that you would listen to them offering you internships and jobs. But if I have the interest, we'll go down there again. They'd love to have some, like I said, they want fresh blood. They're tired of Mizzou and all of these universities down there in Missouri and in southern Illinois. They want some fresh blood. And they thought ISU could be that, but, well, there you go. That's what worries me, is I don't want U of I to have the chance. U of I needs to just go away.
I didn't say that.
If we don't take an opportunity, someone will. And when you're being offered internships, you're being offered jobs after you graduate, and all this, oh, please, why don't you come with us? We've got all these fun programs. You can become, if you don't like finance, well, we've got these education programs. You can help develop the learning materials for high schools and junior highs and elementary schools. Yeah, good stuff. But, you know, unfortunately, they actually offered a straight-up job to one of my students. Unfortunately, she was a libertarian. The only good government is no government, so that worked out real well. Not. So the Federal Reserve has three jobs under law. It actually has a fourth one, and I'm not going to get into that. The first job is that it regulates and supervises the banking system. Now, here's how that works. The Board of Governors regulates. They take laws and they turn them into actionable regulations. In other words, well, you broke the law. Well, no. You have to have regulations that reflect the law in a way that we can do this. It can say, you will... Okay. You, sir, will not fart. Well, because how do I regulate? How do I prosecute you? Unless I explain to you, you use Beano, you do this and that. You see, you have to say, here's how you follow the law. That's what regulation means. That's done by the Board of Governors, and then they tell the district banks, these are the regulations we have created from laws that have been passed. And so then the banks go and supervise the banks in their district. So the board regulates and the banks supervise. Now, do understand, and I had mentioned this before, that the problem with that whole thing is that not all banks are under the authority of the Federal Reserve. It's a freaking crazy quilt. You've got some banks that are under the authority of the Federal Reserve. Other banks are under the authority of the Comptroller of the Currency. Other banks are under the control of the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Other banks are under state control. Then there are these credit unions that have their own regulatory structure. We tried to, after the crisis in 2008, we had this moment of clarity. They all need to be regulated by the same entity. Oh, then the turf wars started. Comptroller of the Currency, you ain't touching our banks. The Federal Reserve, we should be everyone's regulator. And then the FDIC, yeah, right, look how great you did in the 2008 crisis. You know, it just got to be an ugly turf war. We're still where we were. There is not a comprehensive regulator of all banks in the United States, much less is there a comprehensive regulator of all financial institutions in the United States, much less is there even an authoritative way to send the bad guys to prison. I'll tell you a story right now. At the career fair last year, one of the state attorneys, they're like U.S. attorneys, the state attorneys for Illinois, he had a table there, and I said, you're looking for attorneys to crack down on the bank robbers, huh? He said, no, we're looking for people, finance accounting majors, who want to help us start putting the white-collar criminals in prison. I said, you're kidding. He said, no. He said, you don't understand. He said, we cannot go after all of the bad guys in the banks, in the brokerage houses. We can't do it. We just don't have the manpower to do it. And we have these people who have been screwed out of their life savings in some of these financial institutions in Illinois. And what happens? Who do you call? Well, they go, yeah, that's exactly. You know, they called the guy said, well, you know, we have these calls every week from the highway patrol because they get calls. I got screwed out of my money at a bank. And the highway patrol says, we don't know what to do about it. So can you tell us what to do? And the state attorney says, we don't have the manpower to do anything about it. You see how bad the system is right now? Well, you see, at your level and my level, they'll find a way. They will send our asses to prison. But we're talking about at the federal level and at the big state level, especially at the federal level. We've got people who are running banks that go before Congress, and the Congress people just drool and fall all over themselves, humiliating themselves before these crooks like Jamie Dimon.
Which banks?
Which I'm not going to say that. Do you want to, look. I've said enough things about Putin that I'm afraid I'm going to get a polonium sandwich some night. Will you relax? You don't have enough to worry about it.
But I'm always worried.
What's your major?
Marketing.
Yep. Oh, burn! Burn!
And sales.
You might make some money there, but you'll have to be a drunk. Didn't say that. I did not say that. Okay, now, the second thing. The Federal Reserve acts as a bank for banks. Now, the Federal Reserve acting as a bank for banks, essentially a bank has to have a bank to put its money in. So the Federal Reserve can do that. But the Federal Reserve Charter says that it cannot compete in such a way that commercial banks can't do the same thing. So in other words, you own a bank, you could use the Federal Reserve, me, as your bank for writing checks, or you could use this private commercial bank to do it. We are not allowed at the Fed to do anything as far as pricing of our services that would harm your chance to get her business. Even more so, the Federal Reserve is mandated to advance technology in banking, and anything they innovate, they have to give you for free. They have to share all of their, anything that they develop with you completely free. And so, interestingly enough, you have your choice, the public sector or the private sector, and they compete against each other. The first thing that you'll notice is that the commercial banks that serve as banks for banks, they are very profitable. There is nothing there. They are not hurt at all by the competition from the Fed. In fact, they benefit. You know, on those checks, those magnetic strips that are what used to be checks people used, those were a Fed invention, and they immediately shared it with every bank. All of these ATMs, how lightning fast they are, that electronic technology was developed by the Fed, and then it was just given to all of the banks here. And yet, every year, the Fed turns over in profit to the United States government billions of dollars. The Fed is profitable doing this, and yet it does not destroy its competitors doing it. It's an amazing system. And during the healthcare debate back in 2009, Everyone, well, we got to have universal health care, everything paid by the government. No, no, the government shouldn't do it. It should all be private sector. I was writing these articles. You've got a model. The Fed does this with banking. Why can't we do the same thing with health insurance? Have a health insurance agency that's run by the government under the same rules that the Federal Reserve Bank for Banks do. And then it competes directly with, but also supports with technological innovation, the private sector health insurers. That way we make sure everyone is covered, just like every bank has a bank. Oh, no one wanted to hear that. The leftists screamed at me, you love the capitalist running dog, and then the right-wingers were screaming at me, you're one of them communists, aren't you? It was a simple idea. It works. We've had a model that's been working for almost 100 years. No, no, that would have worked. So let's do something else. Anyway, that's me bitching. Ignore me, okay? Three, the Federal Reserve conducts monetary policy. You see, when a country prints money, if it prints too little, it starves the economy's liquidity. But if it prints too much, it creates inflation. The temptation is to print too much because in the short run, it causes the economy to move faster. It's only the long-term consequence that is inflation. Know this, no matter what anyone tells you, the only cause of inflation is the growth rate of the money supply exceeding the real growth rate of an economy. Nothing else creates real embedded systemic inflation. Oh, that company raised its prices. That's going to cause inflation. No, it isn't. There's a union. It's got a high wage. That's inflation. No, it's not. There's only one way that inflation can be created. Too much money chasing too few goods. Go ahead. You had a question. Too much money replacing too few goods. Chasing too much few goods. Yeah, go ahead. Okay. You beat me to it, darn you. It's actually not just Venezuela. I mean, countries get tempted. Print more money. Be popular. Wouldn't you love it if I put $50 in all of your pockets? Ah, hell, let's make it 100. You'll elect me president. I mean, that's what you do. You see, the temptation is there. Putting it in the hands of the Fed depoliticizes it. If we had done that with tax rates, we would not have these horrible wars we have. But what happened in Venezuela, well, of course, you're a president who is an ass, you're a dictator, you're a crazy, you're a creep, you're a weirdo. Print money, everyone will love you. Until you print so much money. Did you know Venezuela's inflation rate? They just kept printing money. Okay, the money gets worth less, so we print more money to cover the money that's worth less. It's now gotten to the fact, I believe it was late last week, the president of Venezuela ordered that all money have 6 zeros taken off it. Solves inflation, doesn't it? You do understand that that's the stupidest ass thing you've ever heard. Just knock 6 zeros off everything. Yeah, that took care of the inflation right there. Well, no, because you see, you are a borrower, ma'am. You owe $100,000 on a house. You're the banker. She owes $100,000 on the house. We just ordered by presidential decree to take 6 zeros off the value of your loan. Your loan now is 10 cents. You're happy? Oh, yeah. You happy? Oh, well, that's just because you're a banker, capitalist. You see, it doesn't work. It's the stupidest thing in the world. I mean, it was insane to begin with. But see, that's why we needed to depoliticize the process. Now, don't get me wrong. The Fed still politicizes the process. They still say, well, when the economy's bad, we should put money into the economy. And when the economy is good, we should drain that liquidity out to keep inflation from happening. So the Fed is politicized to a certain extent. But it does resist. Recently, the president was angry because the Fed is raising interest rates. Because there's signs that we've been printing money for so long, that we're going to start getting inflation. So the Fed is doing the responsible thing and clawing back the liquidity, draining liquidity. Well, the president just had a fit, tweeted about it, for God's sake. And, of course, the Federal Reserve chairman more or less simply did like that to him. Monetary policy, there are three ways that it can happen. The first way is they can do that reserve ratio. They set it. If they set it at a high reserve, that slows down that money multiplier. If they set it at a low number, it accelerates the money multiplier. Now, they really don't do that very much because it is a blunt force meat cleaver. You move that percentage a few, and it really has literally a multiplier effect. The second way is through, they actually set a rate at which they will lend banks money. It's called the discount rate. They set that rate. But you see, so banks, if you are a bank and you need to borrow money overnight to cover your reserve requirements, well, you can go to the discount window. However, there's another way you can get the money. You can go to the giant pool of all banks' money. It's called the federal funds market. You can borrow money from them at a higher rate. Now, the Fed can't directly control that federal funds market, but it can to a certain extent through supply and demand of the money. But the federal funds rate is more or less determined by supply and demand of the money in the giant pool of all banks' money. Now, if you could borrow money from the Fed at a low rate, but borrow from other banks at a higher rate, why historically have banks borrowed from the federal funds market instead of from the discount window? Why? Why was it that banks typically, historically, go to the higher rate overnight Fed funds market instead of going to the discount window and borrowing at a lower rate? Can you think of a reason? It's very simple. You, sir. You are my son.
Congratulations.
Right? I mean, and you need $1,000. You know you can come to me and I will give it to you at no interest. Or you can go to your friend here and he'll charge you interest. You need that money right away. I mean, seriously. Why wouldn't you come to me, your dad, for the money? I'll beat your ass. Seriously, I'm going to ask you questions. What in the hell do you need $1,000, and why do you keep looking out the window? He's going to say, bro, sure, here's $1,000. Too late. Ping! Hits him in the head. It didn't kill him. It just makes him say, go Cubs now. I didn't say that. But they set the discount rate, and they try to influence the Fed funds rate. The third way, through what are called open market operations. This is the most common day in, day out, open market operations are happening. It works like this. In New York City's Fed District Bank, there is a giant set of floors called the Domestic Trading Desk, the DTT, the Domestic Trading Desk. Now, this is just a giant set of traders. They have dollars, Fed dollars, and they have treasury certificates from the government. What they do all day is with banks, which have dollars and treasury, they buy and sell. If they want to make money go out of the economy, they sell treasury bills to banks, and the dollars, the Fed just shreds. That drains liquidity. If the Fed wants to add money to the market, what it will do is it will buy treasuries from the banks and send them dollars that will fill up the Federal Reserve pool even more, adding liquidity to the market. Billions of dollars are flowing this way every day. And our economy is completely driven by these in the short run, by these flows of money. You see, because the banks can't, if the banks are giving dollars to the Fed for treasuries, they don't have those dollars to lend. But if the bank, Fed is buying treasuries from banks and paying them in dollars, then the banks have more money to lend. Hence, you can cause the economy to grow or slow down through the open market operations. Okay, now I'm going to give you a quiz.